Welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, Kim Silpath. She is Nathan's mom, and today we're going to talk about Nathan's story. Welcome.
Thank you, Laura. It's good to be here.
Nathan's Story, a nonprofit organization that is working for childhood cancer awareness and for making a difference in the lives of kids with cancer. And so let's start, because your life kind of divides up into threes: before 2010, the next 8 years, and then your life after your son passed January 9th. Just last year, 2018.
Yes. Well, before Nathan got diagnosed, we were just your ordinary average family. We have two boys, and my oldest son was a senior in high school. Nathan had just started a new school in fourth grade, and everything was good. He was an avid soccer player. He played defense. My oldest was, you know, working on his senior year, studying fire and rescue, getting ready to go into the Coast Guard, and we were just your average family. Life was good.
Wow, big age gap between the two. Nathan is a baby.
Yes. Yes, he was my baby. He is my baby.
So, average, happy fourth grader, and loving sports and playing, and then life changes.
It did. Nathan had told me they were playing their soccer season, and I guess in October, after the soccer season had finished up, he came to me and said, "Mom, I have a lump on my leg and it really hurts." Well, that's not uncommon. He was defense, and it's a hard position. You do get bumps, you get bruises, shin guards, pads, whether you have them on or not, you're going to get bumped and bruised. And I said, "All right, well, we'll keep an eye on it and see what happens." As time went, he came to me. He was waking up in the middle of the night and he was really complaining about it. And he said, "You know, this is really, really hurting. My knee hurts. The whole area is hurting. The lump wasn't red. It didn't look like any infection. There was no puncture wound. There was nothing there but a lump, and it was growing." And so I made his appointment on November 18th in 2010. And the doctors got him in at 9 a.m. We had x-rays by 10 a.m. I took him back to school around 11 a.m. and had a phone call from the doctor, say lunchtime, that I was to take him to an emergency oncology appointment at Alfred I. DuPont Nemours Children's Hospital in Wilmington.
Did it ever enter your mind that it could be anything but cancer at that point?
Honestly, being very naive, not very aware of the childhood cancer world. I kind of thought it's a tumor. You cut it out, some radiation, boom, you're done. You move on with life. It's just kind of what went through my head. It changed rapidly when I got into the hospital to our oncology appointment. I was surrounded by many, many specialists. Nathan was in the other room playing games with the nurse. And they explained to me the seriousness of the situation, the treatment situation, and our hopes, or their hopes as the specialist, was it didn't spread and that it was localized for Nathan's benefit of outcome. Mm-hmm. And we went from there. He was admitted. They ran multitude of tests, every test and department you could possibly think of. And they scanned him, they MRI'd him, they did everything. And to our benefit, Nathan's cancer was localized in his leg. We stayed in the hospital, and we had to wait for all the pathology to come. Within 24 hours, they had central lines in him. They had biopsies sent out to pathology, and now we had to wait. And that is one of the hardest things in the world to do, is to wait. They kind of knew what cancer it was. They just needed that explanation point on the osteosarcoma for treatment purposes.
So no actual treatment has happened. It's just testing and testing and waiting.
Well, now at this point, he still has the lump. He has Band-Aids and little incisions where they drilled in to do the biopsies. He has a central line in his chest with three lumens that go straight to his heart for treatment, and kind of bewildered. And it was very shocking to my family. We are still very tight-knit, very close. We ate breakfast. You know, my husband would be at work, but I would have breakfast with the children. I would see him off to school. I was there when they got home. I had dinner. We all sat around the dinner table. We ate. We tripped together. We fished together. We did everything together as a family. So this, and it was an hour away from our home. So this was very, very uprooting for my family.
I was about to ask about family support at this time, because it's not just that nobody can understand what's going on in your head. So comfort and support is about all someone can offer at a time like that. It's an isolating event to somebody. And here you are away from your support system.
Yes. We live in Maryland, and a majority of the family lives in Pennsylvania. A couple here in Delaware, and the family did. They rallied around us very tight, friends. And, you know, at the beginning, that you need that, but you also need that breathing time to try to comprehend and just grasp a hold of things that you just said. And my husband was on vacation at the time that all this happened, and he hadn't even had a chance to make it to the hospital at this time when I had even heard the diagnosis. They had to pull me separately and tell me alone. And I actually had to tell my husband that his son had cancer through a text message.
Ugh.
Sitting in the room with my son, because he could see on my face the fear, the fright. I was scared, beyond scared. And he could just, like, he was, what is going on? And I had to send it to him in a text. And in a following text, I said, just excuse yourself to use the restroom so you have some time.
Nathan, how did he find out? And did he understand when they said cancer, what it meant for his future?
I kind of chickened out in that area. And his orthopedic oncologist, he's a specialist at AI that deals with the bones in an oncology world. I really chickened out. I said to him, I said, I cannot tell my son he has cancer. I said, I don't know how to tell him. I cannot tell him. I can't even say the word. And I didn't want to scare him. And I knew if it was coming from me, it was coming in a very difficult manner. A lot of falling over my feet and my words and tears and upset. And he needed me to be strong. So, bless his heart, Dr. Thacker stepped in and said, I'll do it. I will sit down with you and your son and explain what the situation is and what we're going to do to help him. And he did exactly that, and he was phenomenal. And Nathan just sat. At this point, he had this big bunch of balloons that was tied to his bed rail. And he sat, and you know, they have the ribbon that holds the balloons, and he sat and he twisted this ribbon around his finger the whole entire time while he listened. And this poor doctor is watching him twist this around as he's trying to talk to him, because it was tight, and it was super tight around the finger, and his finger was turning blue and purple and all these different colors. And you could see the doctor trying to focus on the situation. But in the meantime, Nathan is wrapping this thing so tight around his finger. But, you know, in the end, when the doctor got done, he asked him if he had any questions, that he would answer anything that he wanted to know. And we had all agreed that to tell Nathan the truth, as I believe it should be, but not to tell them too much. Nothing that he didn't need to know at the time. And so he could absorb it. Nathan is very bright. He was wise beyond his years. And so he understood things. And his grandmother had just fought breast cancer years before. And my best friend had just got done fighting breast cancer. So he was aware of the cancer word. And when the doctor asked him if he had any questions that he needed to answer, he said, no, not at this time.
And then it began 8 years of fighting childhood cancer.
And then, right, it begins. Thanksgiving that year was Nathan's first dose of chemo. And we kind of looked at it as a blessing, as a beginning to an end. We had no idea where we were truly going to go with this. We stayed positive, hopeful through everything. And so did Nathan. You know, that was one thing. I think he took a point in time in the years that he was fighting of, you know, because he just didn't understand why all this was happening to him. And I think he just, you know, I explained it was like getting a bad deck of cards in life. It was nobody's fault. This particular cancer diagnosis of osteosarcoma, it's a fluke cancer. I said, it's nothing that could have changed. It didn't come specifically from mommy or daddy or from generations behind. I said, they find it in the dinosaurs when they do archaeological digs. They find it in the old bones that they dig up. I said, it's there. It's just something that happens. And he took that and said, okay, and just kept on going.
Were you able to accept that, that it was nothing that you could have done, or that did you feel bad or guilty?
I absolutely did. You know, I read and I read and I studied and I read and researched everything I possibly could get my hands on. The hospital advised me to be very careful on the web because some of it is not truthful and any questions to ask. And I did. And they were phenomenal in that situation. But at the same point, I thought, why didn't I get the lump checked earlier? Why didn't I? Why didn't I do this? Why didn't I do that? You know, when he was saying his leg hurt, why didn't I do something about it? But, you know, in all honesty and all reality, he was 9. You're growing. Mm-hmm. Your bones are growing. He was growing quick. He played soccer. He was running the fields. He ran. He played football. You know, he was very active. He swam. So how would I have known? How would I have truly known? It didn't show up as a cold. It didn't show up as anything like that. It was a lump on the leg that a child gets from just everyday common play. And so it took me a little bit to sit back and say, you didn't do this. You couldn't have done anything different. It wasn't even a month's time from the initial complaint to the doctor's appointment. You know, so you watch for infection. You watch for anything that you could have medically acknowledged or seen. It just wasn't there.
How did he handle the 8 years of treatment? Because there were hope. There was time when it worked and then it didn't work. And you said that with this disease, once you have a remission, you kind of know that this is a chronic situation. It's not going to go away.
A relapse. A remission is you're clear, you're done, you're good. You know, Nathan handled it amazing. The date he was diagnosed, you know, social work at the hospital shows up to offer you assistance and tell you about everything that's there and this, that, and the other. And Nathan had went through a lot of bullying in school, and he was having a lot of trouble with that for years. And he had just started a new school with the hope that this is going to be a new outlook, this is going to be a new beginning for me. So he didn't have a lot of self-esteem and confidence when it came to his peers. And, I remember saying to the social worker, I said, I will get through this. This is what I do. I survive. I said, but my son, I said, Nathan, I said, he's lacking in the self-esteem, the confidence, the drive. I said, because he's been through all of this, has endured all this. I said, and he's exhausted mentally, emotionally. I said, he is very exhausted. I said, I truly don't know where he's going to find it to pull to do this. This is a long treatment. And she said, we have different programs. We'll work on this. I'm glad you told me that. And, you know, I said, I've got his older brother. I said, this is going to be hard for them. I said, they're very close. They're going to be separated. So Nathan was amazing. Like, he just pulled this strength out of nowhere. And he stepped up to the plate and he fought cancer. He had limb salvage surgery in the leg, and we were lucky to be able to save his leg. And what they did was they had to cut his leg out between right above the knee and to the ankle, and so they took that piece out and implanted a prosthetic, and it was a mechanically driven prosthetic. Doctor brought it in from UK with the doctor. You know, it wasn't in the US. He was the first one in the hospital. It was a big ta-da. But even that, he just stepped up and he did this. And you know, he not only gave himself the courage and the strength to get through it, he gave me the strength and the courage to get through it. It's amazing what you can learn from your children when you open yourself up to allow yourself to do that. He was just amazing. And he just kept on going every time he got another punch in the gut with it. He finished his first treatment. It was from November to July. So what's that? Nine months with the surgery in between. He relapsed within 6 months and had a metastatic diagnosis in April of 2012. It was metastatic bilateral lung osteosarcoma, the bone cancer, had spread to his lungs. He went through two lung surgeries where they cut out the tumors and the chunks of the lung that they needed to get it out and went right back into treatment. And as I'm telling him that we got, you know, the biopsies came back and pathology, and it was definitely bone cancer again. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, step up, Mom. It's your turn to tell your son what is going on. You can't cower behind a doctor. You can't do that. You have to tell him the truth. You promised him you would tell him the truth. So when we got the results, we were sitting on the back deck and we were talking about everything under the sun. And, you know, we went from good things to bad things and how sometimes things just, bad things happen to good people and there's nothing that you can do. And sometimes, you know, people get sick and they think they're better and they're not. And then I went into the conversation that the pathology results came back that he had cancer again. And as I'm gearing up for him to either just fall apart or be angry, which he had every right to be, and he said to me, "Hey, Mom," and you know, when your son says, "Hey, Mom," you just never know what's going to come out of their mouth. It can be good, it can be bad. You just never know. And I said, "Yeah, what is it, Monkey?" Because that's what I call him. He said, it's not about me anymore, Mom. He said, it's about the other children fighting cancer now. He said, we need to make a difference. And this is my 11-year-old child looking at me, and I'm actually looking up at him as if he is a grown adult now, in just shock in my face, thinking to myself, what? You know, what? He said, we need to do something to make a difference. He said, we need to start an organization to make a difference for children fighting cancer, and it needs to be where it counts. When they're in treatment, he says, and it's got to come from the heart and it needs to be personalized to the child. He said, because, you know, he said, it's not about me anymore. And I just kind of had to shake this off because I had no idea how to even start this, where to go from this. And I looked at him without even really thinking about it and said, okay, then, that's what we're going to do.
And you did. And it is, and he did. It's Nathan's Story. If you'd like to know more about it, you can visit them online, nathansstory.com. That's nathansstory.com. And today, we're talking to Nathan's mom, Kim Silpath. So you form a charity. He actually starts the fundraising himself and thinking about ways to help kids who are facing cancer. Kids, obviously, when they get cancer, it's a different story altogether. They're dealing with treatments that maybe were developed for adults. They're dealing with different challenges down the line. Infertility when they grow up, and the treatment that can save them from the cancer can cause problems for the rest of their lives. It's a rough road that they have to hoe. And Nathan's Story, your fundraising, what are you doing?
We're following his dream. You know, when Nathan was here with us, he would guide us. We would be on a trip to the hospital and he'd say, oh, I have an idea. And I'd think, oh boy. And his very first idea before we even got our 501c3 status was license plates on cars. He said, Mom, we could sit here in a light and make awareness that children get cancer too. He said, so many people don't realize it. And he knew that because many times, even with his bald little head being there with somebody, somebody would say to him, kids don't get cancer. And he would say, I really wish that was true. And maybe one day it won't be. But I can tell you, I have cancer. I'm fighting cancer. And I have for years. And I will be forever.
And you got those license plates
and
in Maryland.
We have them license plates on the road in the state of Maryland.
You're working with DuPont Hospital.
I work with DuPont Hospital. We do holiday bags. We have a big, big thing that we do at the holidays this time of the year, and we call it a piece of home, where we try to bring a little piece of home into the holiday, and we usually do it in the middle of December, and we have a sponsor a tree opportunity. It's $15 per tree. We get each child in the oncology unit and the BBMT unit, hematology oncology, a little 32-inch fiber optic tree that is theirs. We do a catered dinner. We go shopping and we just bring the stores in there and let the children pick out what they want. Middletown police officer, does this huge book fundraiser and gets us books in that we bring up. And the kids love this. They love to be able to pick out what they want. The siblings get something. We sit and we do crafts and we talk. And, you know, we bring some home into the hospital for them. Nathan spent every holiday in there in treatment except for Halloween. And that was one of those, it needs to go where it counts and be personalized for these kids, is what he meant.
What's a smile box?
The smile boxes, they're another one of Nathan's little dreams, and it was really heartbreaking that we couldn't kick it off while Nathan was still with us. They are smile boxes, just that. They are personalized to the child. We get information from about the child from either the parent or the grandparent, whoever, you know, aunt, uncle, guardian of the child. And we personally shop for them, some things we order online, and then we ship it to the child. And we ship across the U.S. to the children and enjoy it. Smile, have fun, and just absorb yourself in that box.
Coming up in February? Is it in February?
Yes. Yes. Coming up in February of 2020, we are excited to say that we will be working with Main Event here in Newark, right by the Christiana Mall. And we will be having our very first Nathan Story Family Fun Day, hashtag for the Warriors. Tickets will be available through Eventbrite. They'll be $30 plus the fee. And what that ticket gets is 4 hours of all activities choice in Main Event. And if you know anything about Main Event, they have bowling, they have arcade center, they have laser tag, they have the rope walk up in the sky thing. And then there'll also be two slices of pizza included in that, and unlimited fountain drinks. But there'll also be, for those adults that want to come and just let your kids enjoy the moment, we will have food, fountain drinks, and of course, there are beverages there. But through the food and fountain drinks that you purchase that night while you are there, 20% of those proceeds will come back to Nathan's Story. All of the money that we raise at Nathan's Story goes to the cause. We're 100% volunteer. We are a 501c3 nonprofit. So that makes it easier for us to take all of our dollars that we get in donations and raise at these fundraisers and put it out to the cause instead of in our pockets.
Now, you're redoing rooms.
Yes. Well, not exactly rooms. You know, Nathan went into end-of-life care January 5th, and it was unexpected. It was a shock to his doctors. It was a shock to us. And Nathan had no clue, because that was something that he desired not to know. And he went into end-of-life care 250%, giving the doctors what for, letting them know this, and now this was Nathan. So nothing would be unexpected out of him. His opinion was very valued in the hospital. He was there for a very long time. They saw him grow from 9 to 16. And he knew the difference between being 9, being 13, and being 16, and the needs. And he didn't take advantage of them, except for if it was something he really didn't want to do. You know, he'd bribe an iTunes card out or the social worker or something to do it. But through this end-of-life care, they have, you know, they bring in bariatric beds, and they're large beds so that the family can sit with the child or whoever in the end-of-life care. And this bed was a nightmare. It was just an absolute nightmare for Nathan. And he never complained about things like this. And he told them, as his doctors walked in, he would call them the Three Stooges. And he would tell them, he said, you need to do something about these beds. He said, my dog shouldn't even lie on a bed like this. This is terrible. This is terrible. Well, this isn't a bed that the hospital owns. It's something that comes in for these particular times and moments. And he said, you need to be gelling. He said, you need to get some gel up in this place. He said, so we could be comfortable and relax. And he said, if I have to stay in this bed, he said, I want to be gelling. So we had to find gel pads all through the hospital to help him because he was genuinely hurting from this. And that part of that had to do with his situation, maybe not necessarily the bed, but and we did. And the gel pads that we brought in and the staff brought in and whatnot, we got them underneath of Nathan. And, you know, we had to rotate Nathan and shift his body and stuff as he would be sleeping or whatnot. And they added 15 pounds to him. And we couldn't move him or it would hurt. So it would take sometimes 6, 7, or 8 of us. The doctors were helping, the nurses, everybody was helping move him with these pads. And so days later, Nathan passed away on January 9th. And I said to my board, you know, through this, I said, we're going to change these beds. We're going to change these beds. And a very good friend of mine, who is also a board member, he works at the Morris, and he started that ball rolling inside just talking to him because naturally, you know, we were dealing with situations that we had to deal with Nathan's passing. And he had the company come in, and they all got a hold of me because they knew, you know, give me enough time and I'm coming back in there and this is going to happen. And so we all got together with their distributor that they deal with, and we tried these different ones out for these bariatric beds. And we came up with a bed that was not only gel on the top, but it's also an air mattress underneath. And we had to try like all these different beds out. And it was funny because some of them were just no, you know, but it was fun. It was so we came up with this. And in Nathan's honor and Nathan's memory, the hospital, they wouldn't even let us purchase this bed. They went and they purchased this bed. And now it's the hospital's bed, and they have it there for situation that calls for the need of this bed. And, you know, the difference that it makes is just huge because you have your loved one as an adult and they're bedridden and it's end-of-life care, and they just kind of go with it, you know, and they're uncomfortable and whatnot. And when you have your child sitting there just saying, it hurts, like this bed hurts me, you need to change that. And this was, without him knowing, Nathan's last wish, really, that he verbalized, and we determined that we were going to make happen. So the hospital has now invested on their own 2 of these beds for the bariatric, the end-of-life care. But what we are going to do as Nathan's story is change all the beds out on the HEMONC, the hematology oncology unit, for these children. And depending how much we buy at a time, depends on the discount, of course, that we get from the company, because it's bulk, you know, it's like anything you buy. And the company is working with us. Phenomenal. So that's what we're going to do. And hopefully part of the proceeds will go to this.
And we get the tickets on Eventbrite. But now, what's the date?
The date is February 16th, 2020. It is from 5 to 9. And the tickets will be available through Eventbrite. They're $30 plus the fees. So give me some time. I'll get it on there and you could start signing up.
Nathan's Story. For more information, of course, you go to that. Go to nathanstory.com. You'll hear the story. You'll read the story about Nathan, a brave young man who's still making a difference. And you'll hear more about how you can get involved and how you can help. That's nathanstory.com. And his mom, the president of Nathan's Story, Kim Silpath, here. And thank you, Kim, for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me in. It was a great opportunity to sit and talk to you and share Nathan's story and the dreams that he has created that keep on going and giving.
Thank you, Kim. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.